Welcome to the Studying the Bible podcast, where every Thursday, Pastors Dylan Dodson and Brian Androsian study a book of the Bible, verse by verse, to see what is being communicated and how we can use it to grow in our relationship with Jesus. We pray that today's podcast can help you grow just a little bit closer to Christ.
Well, hey everybody, welcome back to our Bible study through the book of Galatians. Today we're going to be in Galatians chapter 4, verses 12 through 31. So where we're at in chapter 4, what's been happening so far is Paul has started by making a comparison to Exodus and how, although the Israelites were slaves, we are no longer slaves to anything because of Jesus. So Jesus came to redeem those that were under the law and those outside of the law so that all could experience adoption as sons. So Paul's encouraging the Galatians to not turn back to their old gods, to their old ways. Whether it be the Torah or the gods that they worshipped previously, nothing should be put above Jesus. Jesus should be the most important, and nothing should be put above him. And Paul ended the section that we studied previously by saying that he was fearful for them, that perhaps his labor for them had been wasted. He was afraid that these other teachers, these other Jewish teachers, what they had been telling the Galatian Gentiles, that they needed to kind of conform to the Torah, to their way of doing things. He's worried that their influence is becoming so powerful that all the work that he did for them and with them has been wasted. So today we're going to pick up in Galatians chapter 4, verses 12, and it starts off by saying this. It says, "I beg you, brothers and sisters, become as I am, for I also have become as you are." So Paul calls the Galatians brothers and sisters. There are other translations use the word friends. And the implication here is that Paul sees them as equals. Later in this section, he refers to them as children, but in this instance, he's referring to them as equals. And this is the point in the letter where Paul begins kind of giving commands. Become as I am, he says. He says, become as I am. And Paul is continuing his idea here regarding the practices of the Jews and the Gentiles. He's telling the Gentile believers in Galatia that he has become like them by laying aside his Jewish traditions and the requirements that were imposed by that were imposed on Jewish believers for the sake of the Gentiles. So things like eating with the Gentiles that he wasn't able to do before, or that Jewish believers didn't do, he set that aside for the sake of the Galatians. Likewise, he's asking them to do the same thing. He's become like they are in acting like a Gentile, so he expects them to become like he is in not trying to conform to the Jewish traditions and practices. So he's not saying, become like I am in the sense of conform to my way of doing things or become like the Jewish believers are. He's not saying like that. He's saying, I've walked away from that. I'm no longer under the Torah, the rule of the Torah. I'm no longer under the law of the Torah. And so become like I am and don't make yourself be under the law, be under the Torah, but instead just follow Jesus. See, this is a common theme in Paul's letters. The good news here is that he isn't telling them to figure things out on their own. He's not saying, you need to figure out how to do this, you need to figure out how to follow Jesus. He's giving them a simple instruction. He's saying, imitate me. And it's similar to what he writes in the book of Philippians. In Philippians 3:17, he says, join in imitating me, brothers and sisters, and pay careful attention to those who live according to the example you have in us. So Paul doesn't want them to go and try and figure things out on their own, figure out what it means to follow Jesus on their own. Rather, he just asks them to become as he is. Look at him as an example, as someone who is close to and follows Jesus, and just follow his example. Now, this isn't Paul being cocky or Paul saying, I've got it all figured out, so just do what I do and you'll be good. But Paul's saying that he's like, hey, I've experienced Jesus. I've had an interaction with Jesus. I'm a Jesus follower. So all you need to do is follow Jesus the way that I'm following Jesus, not because I'm the best or because I have it all figured out, but because I'm the example you have. I'm the one who's been teaching you, and just follow my example, and that's the way you need to follow Jesus. And he continues as we continue in verse 12, he says, you have not wronged me. You know that previously I preached the gospel to you because of a weakness of the flesh. You did not despise or reject me, though my physical condition was a trial for you. On the contrary, you received me as an angel of God, as Christ Jesus himself. So Paul is referring to when he originally came to Galatia to preach the gospel originally. And this section sounds kind of odd because he commends them for not despising him for preaching through a physical condition. Now, we don't know what that physical condition that he talks about is that he was afflicted with. It may have been an illness that kept him in Galatia kind of longer than was planned or longer than he expected. Or it could have been kind of like marks that were showing that he was persecuted, wounds that would have been inflicted on him when he was persecuted previously. But regardless, the physical infirmities what happens is these were often seen as a curse or punishment from God or from the gods. However, he says that they received him as an angel of God or as a messenger of God and treated him with hospitality that would be expected of a messenger of God. So he's saying you didn't treat me differently, even though you could have. Kind of like the way that you were brought up and your kind of understanding of how things worked previously would have said to treat me differently because of this illness or this physical condition that I showed, but you didn't. You didn't treat me as if I was cursed or that I was or I had a curse put on me from the gods or from God, but you treated me as if I was a messenger from God. You treated me with the hospitality that a messenger from God would deserve. So he's commending them for doing this. It continues in 15 and 16. It says, "Where then is your blessing? For I testify to you that, if possible, you would have torn out your eyes and given them to me. So then, have I become an enemy because I told you the truth?" So what's going on here? Some people have suggested that the reference to tearing out their eyes and giving them to him meant that Paul's physical condition was related to his eyesight, that he's experiencing some sort of, whether it be blindness or some condition of his eyes. However, his condition certainly could have been related to his eyes. We don't know that it wasn't, but this phrase likely wasn't referencing Paul's physical issue. This is just kind of a figure of speech that was referring to their great sacrifice, that they are willing to sacrifice anything. They're willing to sacrifice their eyes on Paul's behalf. So what Paul is saying here is that originally they received him with such hospitality that they overlooked his physical issues. They're willing to sacrifice for him. They just treated him with such extreme generosity and hospitality. But now, they're almost treating him like an enemy. And what he means by this is that these other teachers who were trying to get the Galatian Gentiles to conform to the Jewish law, that they were likely suggesting that Paul was actually an enemy because he was trying to undermine their teaching regarding following the Torah. So he's saying that what's likely happening is these other teachers were telling these Gentile believers that Paul was actually the enemy because he was telling them, hey, you don't have to come under the Torah. You don't have to follow Jewish law. Jesus, because of Jesus, that's no longer necessary. And so these Jewish leaders are saying that Paul is the enemy here. He's telling them that he's telling you, you don't need to do something that's actually required. So they're saying that Paul is the enemy, but Paul is simply pointing out that their attitude toward him flipped so drastically. The Galatians' attitude towards Paul just kind of like did a complete 180. They cared for and received him previously, but now that these other teachers are teaching something different, they no longer believe what Paul originally taught. So he's saying, you've done a 180 here. You believed, you treated me with such hospitality before, and you believed the things that I taught, and you treated me as if I was a messenger from God, but now you're treating me like the enemy. And he continues in 17. He says, they court you eagerly, but not for good. They want to exclude you from me so that you would pursue them. But it is always good to be pursued in a good manner and not just when I'm with you. So these other teachers were courting or pursuing the Galatians eagerly, but not for their own good, not for the Galatians' good, not for the good for these Gentile Galatians. And when Peter was originally eating with the Gentiles and then left them when the other Jewish believers showed up, which we saw earlier in the book, to no longer eat with the uncircumcised Gentiles, they excluded the uncircumcised and essentially made the circle of Jews exclusive. That way, if the Gentiles wanted to continue being involved with them, they would have to pursue them and they'd have to get circumcised. They'd have to do the things that the Jewish people did. And Paul is saying that this is why they exclude you from eating with them. It's so that you'll want to pursue them. It's like, this is why they're cutting you off. It's so that you'll chase after them, that you'll pursue them. You'll want to be a part of the group that they're a part of, and you'll want to conform to their teaching in order to be accepted. So Paul's kind of pointing out what these Jewish leaders are doing here. He continues in 19. He says, "My children, I am again suffering labor pains for you until Christ is formed in you. I would like to be with you right now and change my tone of voice because I don't know what to do about you." So what's interesting here is that these teachers and leaders in this day, they were often viewed as fathers. In Roman culture, fathers ruled over their children with absolute power. So it'd be normal to kind of to use phrasing that would say that he was kind of like their father. But Paul here is taking a completely different approach. He refers to himself as in the image of a mother. Instead of talking like he has absolute power for them, he approaches them with affection and intimacy. And so labor pains, like Paul's referencing here, were seen at the time as the most severe pain that a human could experience. And mothers often died in childbirth. It was a dangerous thing at this time. So Paul is using this imagery of a mother loving her child despite the intense pain that she has to endure on their behalf. So he's saying, this is how intense my love is for you, that I would endure what we think of as the most intense pain imaginable that could even lead to death. I would endure that on your behalf. That's what Paul's communicating here. And I love his honesty in verse 20. He says, "I wish I could be there with you now because I don't know what to do about you." He's just honest, saying that he's at a loss and in disbelief that they're headed the way that they are. That's kind of the theme we've been seeing so far, is like, you believed one thing and now you're flipping to this other way of thinking. And Paul's just, it's almost, he's not giving up, but it's almost as if he's throwing his hands in the air and just being like, "I don't know what to do with you anymore. Like, why are you changing your belief? Why, you were going down such a good path before. Why are you making such a 180 and making such a sharp turn now?" And he's just like, I have this such intense care and love for you. And it's like, I don't even know what to do anymore. It's kind of like what he's communicating here. And Paul continues in this next section as we continue with a comparison of Sarah and Hagar from the book of Genesis. And he sets it up in these next few verses to make the point in the following verses. So he's going to kind of set things up here to make a point that he's going to continue with in the next few verses. So in verse 21, he continues, he says, "Tell me, you who want to be under the law, don't you hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a slave and the other by a free woman. But the one by the slave was born as a result of the flesh, while the one by the free woman was born through promise." So Paul begins by telling those that want to be under the law, or I'm sorry, by calling them those that want to be under the law. He's saying that if you want to be under the law, do you even know what it says? Like, do you know personally what it says, or are you just kind of believing what's being told to you? So what he's talking about here is he's going back to the book of Genesis, talking about Abraham. And Abraham, if you're unfamiliar, Abraham had two sons. When he and his wife Sarah couldn't have a child, instead of waiting on God's timing and God's promise, because God promised them that they would have a child and that they would bear many children, and that his lineage would be so vast and extreme, but they were getting old and they hadn't had any children. So instead of waiting on God's timing, Abraham slept with and had a child through his slave, Hagar, who was named Ishmael. However, God had promised that Sarah would have a child, and she ultimately did, named Isaac, through which came Jacob and the Jewish people and this whole lineage. So Paul here is setting up these two categories. He's setting up this category of slave and free. That's what's happening in these two verses. He's kind of setting up slave and free, these two categories, and then he's going to continue in verse 24. It says, "These things are being taken figuratively, for the women represent two covenants. One is from Mount Sinai and bears children into slavery. This is Hagar. Now Hagar represents Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. But the Jerusalem above is free, and she is our mother. For it is written, 'Rejoice, childless woman, unable to give birth. Burst into song and shout, you who are not in labor, for the children of the desolate woman will be many, more numerous than those of the woman who has a husband.'" So Paul is using Hagar and Sarah to make a comparison of kind of still being under the Torah and having freedom in Jesus. He says that those that are still living under the law are like Hagar and bearing children into slavery. And he continues using the sharp comparison of slavery to staying under the law, saying that it's keeping them from being enslaved, or it's keeping them enslaved, it's keeping them enslaved and keeping them from experiencing freedom that comes from Jesus. However, on the opposite side, he said, there's Sarah. And Paul references the covenant God made with Abraham and Sarah, and that she would have children. He's saying that Sarah represents the freedom that we have in Christ. We are no longer enslaved to the Torah, but we have freedom that can come from none other than Christ. And Paul continues in verse 28. He says, now you too, brothers and sisters, like Isaac, are children of promise. Paul's continuing by saying that that the Jesus believers in Galatia are children of the promise, or children of Sarah, promised by God. Even though they're uncircumcised, even though they're Gentiles, even though they're not Jewish by birth, you are still a part of God's promise to Abraham and Sarah, and you are a part of God's family, even though you weren't brought up under the Torah. He's calling them children of the promise, children that were under God's promise or God's covenant to Abraham. Saying you are now part of God's family, even though you weren't Jewish, even though you weren't circumcised, even though you didn't come up under the law, but you are now a part of God's family. As we wrap up this section in verses 29 through 31, Paul continues. He says, but just as then the child born as a result of the flesh persecuted the one born as a result of the spirit, so also now. But what does Scripture say? Drive out the slave and her son, for the son of the slave will never be co-heir with the son of the free woman. Therefore, brothers and sisters, we are not children of a slave, but of the free woman. So what's happening here is Paul's quoting from Genesis 21. As he continues the story of Hagar and Sarah. See, in Genesis 21, we see Isaac's birth, and then we see Sarah catching Ishmael, Hagar's son, mocking or abusing Isaac in some way. And she drives Hagar and Ishmael away. See, here Paul is making a reference to this interaction, to kind of a comparison to this interaction, to some sort of persecution that the church was facing now at the time of his writing. See, it's likely here that there had been some violence between the Gentiles and Jewish groups, and that these Jewish leaders were trying to convince the Gentiles to come under the Jewish law so that more violence wouldn't be incited. See, they're kind of trying to make them be one of them, so that there wouldn't be any, so that it could help kind of avert some of the violence that was happening between these two groups. But Paul ends his chapter by saying that we're not children of a slave, but of a free woman. That even though the even though they are Gentiles, they're under God's promise because they are Jesus followers. They're no longer separated, but they're co-heirs because Jesus has united both Jew and Gentile under the commonality of following him. So because of Jesus, we're not separated anymore. Because of Jesus, you're not a Gentile in the sense that we've kind of always believed before, but you are now part of God's family. That we're not separated anymore, but we're all united and one under the commonality of following Jesus. So today, as we wrap up chapter 4, I want to give us three takeaways that we can see in this kind of second half of Galatians chapter 4. And the first is this, it's to be confident in your beliefs. Be confident in your beliefs. And what we can see in kind of this section, and we've seen it many times throughout the book of Galatians, that we've seen that the Galatian believers had correct beliefs. They originally had correct beliefs. They were originally following Jesus the way that Paul had instructed them to. But they were being persuaded by these Jewish leaders to abandon them, or at least to walk away from portions of their belief, of what they knew to be true, to come under the law, as the Jewish leaders were telling them they needed to do. But as Paul's continued to say, you know what the truth is, so be confident in your beliefs. So what we can see here is if you're a follower of Jesus, be confident in that belief that you're a follower of Jesus. Be confident in what you know to be true, that in the truth of the gospel, that Jesus came and died a death for you so that you could have access to his family, so that you could have forgiveness of sins and all these things that we know to be true as followers of Jesus. He's saying, be confident in your beliefs. And that's what we need to hear today, to be confident in your beliefs. Don't let someone come and kind of dissuade you from it. Don't let someone say what it takes is Jesus plus something else, that Jesus isn't everything, but we need to do certain things in order to live up to Jesus, or we need to do certain things in order to qualify, so to speak, for Jesus. But be confident in your beliefs that Jesus is what it takes. Jesus' grace is sufficient. It doesn't take us adding or subtracting anything from it. Second thing we can see here is that we are co-heirs of Christ. Because of what Jesus did, we are co-heirs. We are heirs of God's promise. It's not based on anything we've done. It's based on what Jesus did. Because of his death, we are able to be heirs of God's promises. Again, not because of anything we've done, not because we're special, not because of any works that we've done or we've done anything to live up to it, but because of everything that Jesus did, we are able to be heirs of Christ. Then the third thing we can see today is that Jesus unites all under him. It's just like how Paul was talking about Sarah and Hagar and those that were under the law and those that weren't under the law, Jesus unites all, regardless of background, regardless of status. He unites all under the commonality of following him. See, he is the main uniting factor. And what matters is that we're following him. Jesus is the main thing. Jesus is what brings people from different people groups together, different backgrounds, different statuses, different issues that we're all facing. We can all be united under the commonality of following Jesus. Because what we know is that Jesus died for all, not for some. Jesus died for all, regardless of background, regardless of issue that we're struggling with, regardless of whoever we are. Jesus died for you and died for me, and Jesus unites all under him. And all he asks from you and from me is to follow him. Follow him just as we're seeing Paul remind and encourage the Galatians to do, to follow him because he paid the ultimate sacrifice for us. And he did for us what we can never do for ourselves in saving us and giving his life and his death and resurrection so that we could experience forgiveness. Jesus unites all under him. And that's what we see today in Galatians chapter 4, verses 12 through 31.